Welcome everybody and thank you for listening to a new episode of Fit for the Future, your bite-sized learning podcast from Archipel Academy. We will take a deep dive into today's most thought-provoking HR and L&D topics. Learn how to overcome today's biggest challenge for the field to stay relevant now and in the future. My name is Ibo Deerin and I'm your host today. And I would like to welcome you, Philip, on this new podcast. Maybe interesting for you to tell the audience online at home who you are, what you are doing, and how you're going to inspire us in the upcoming 20 minutes.
Sure. Thanks, Ivo. And thank you for having me. My name is Philip Eskenazi. I'm from Amersfoort, the Netherlands. I work as a teacher for various business schools like the Rotterdam School of Management, Amsterdam Business School, and now also with relevance learning, where we are working on a standard proposition around the topic of critical thinking and decision making. So we're going to reach a lot of people in the corporate world with this program, with a topic that's very dear to my heart.
Great. Great to hear. Great to have you here and looking forward to doing a deep dive with you on this topic, critical thinking. So the title of this podcast is also Thinking Clearly. Why critical thinking is the ultimate power skill? Could you elaborate on that? Why do you think that critical thinking is the ultimate power skill?
Sure. Yeah. First of all, maybe let me clarify a little bit how critical thinking and decision making relate to each other, because these two topics have a lot of overlap. Decision making, I define that as making a commitment. So whenever you're entering into a commitment, you're making a decision. Yeah. And that's when you want to engage your critical thinking. And this happens all the time. So these commitments can be financial commitments, investments, but they can also be time commitments. They can be commitments how you're going to go through a certain interaction with a customer, for example. So commitments can take a lot of different forms, and all of these are decisions. And if it's an important decision, you want to make sure that you think critically about it. And that's something we're not very good at as human beings. We're just not born with that ability. We didn't evolve to make those kinds of decisions in the modern world. So it happens all the time. It's very important. It's really what drives performance in organizations very often. And we have a lot of room for improvement. So that's why I think this is really a skill where you can make a lot of difference.
Yeah. You just mentioned in your introduction that you are now cooperating with Relevance. Mm-hmm. What's the idea about doing this cooperation with Relevance? And why have you chosen to work with Relevance?
Because I want to have an impact on people in practice.
Yeah.
This is a topic that I think is very important for individuals and for society. Mm-hmm. And Relevance has an amazing reach in the world of organizations. And so it's a great platform to bring these skills to the real world, because I have an academic background.
Yeah.
And I love working in academia, but ultimately my passion is to help people in practice and change the world. Yeah. In my modest way. Yeah, so Relevance is a great platform to do that.
To give your knowledge and experience to a broader audience, to reach more.
To reach more people, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing I sometimes ask in my lectures is, who's ever had a class on thinking? And nobody raises their hand. And then I ask, who thinks thinking is important for their performance at work? And then everybody raises their hand. And that's kind of an interesting gap, right? And
absolutely.
It's a skill that can be trained,
yep.
But we pay very little attention to that in our educational system. And so there's lots of room for improvement.
So do you believe that thinking is underrated? Because every day we think about stuff, we think about the decisions that we make. Sometimes it's automated. When I'm in front of a red light, I don't have to think, should I go through the red light or should I stay at where I am? But is critical thinking a soft skill in your eyes, or do you think that it's underestimated in its strategic importance?
I think it's underrated or underestimated in the sense that a lot of people overestimate how good they are at it.
Overestimate?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And certainly when you go to the higher levels in an organization, there's very few people who think of themselves as poor decision makers or poor thinkers.
Yeah.
And that might be true relatively, right? They might be better decision makers than the average person, but human beings are just not very good in general. So even the best natural decision makers aren't great at it and they need help as well. So a lot of people overestimate their own ability and therefore they're blind to the potential for improvement.
Okay, and then how can you train these individuals to become better in thinking?
Mm-hmm. Great question. I think the first step is creating that awareness, waking people up to the truth that human beings are not great natural decision makers, including themselves. And here, psychology helps a lot. Mm-hmm. So, and this is becoming more popular and more mainstream. So, for example, the work of Daniel Kahneman, he wrote a book called Thinking Fast and Slow, came out about 15 years ago, and that gained a lot of traction. And so people are generally more aware of biases in decision making and that sort of thing. So I think there's more awareness now than a few decades ago, but still there's this sense of overconfidence.
Yeah. But you have a lot of things that influence, of course, your decision making. It can be on an emotional basis, physical. How do you make a decision in improving yourself, your thinking capabilities, your skills, and not being influenced by feelings or whatsoever?
So how do you set aside your feelings? Is that?
Yeah, because you just stayed out. I mean, it's a big statement. People in general are not great thinkers. But if I reflected on myself, on topics that I'm well known at, I'm an expert in, I can make easy decisions. So basically, I don't have to think about it as much. But if there are new topics, new areas that I need to explore, then, of course, I come into a situation where I think about it. But sometimes then emotional or rational things comes into play, which influence my thinking. How, if I reflected on myself, then again, how can you teach me to become a better thinker then?
Mm-hmm. So let me first clarify a little bit what I meant when I say human beings are not great decision makers or thinkers, right? So if you look at the animal kingdom, obviously we are the best thinkers and the most intelligent species, right?
Yes.
So it seems natural to say that human beings are intelligent. But if you ask yourself, are we equipped to solve the kinds of problems we're facing in the modern world? That's a very different question, right? And our brains evolved in very different circumstances than we face today. And the complex decisions that are asked of us in organizations in the modern world, we're just not built to deal with that. That's not the kind of decision making we evolved to do well. And so we don't have the natural tools to solve these problems, but we can learn these tools.
Yeah.
And one way of learning them is through experience. So as you said, when you're in a domain where you have a lot of experience, you generally become quite good at decision making and you can do it quickly and with confidence and you're often right. And that's great. But that only works for situations where you have that experience.
Exactly.
And then if you come to a domain where you don't have that experience or the world changes and, you know, what used to work in the past no longer works.
Exactly.
Then you need a different kind of thinking to do well. And there is that's where we are not very well prepared out of the box. And that's where tools can really help us do better. So by tools, I mean processes that we learn, ways of thinking, concepts, and also tools like computers and models and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So when you experience a gap in what you know, what you can do, and what you're willing to be learning, when you see a gap in what you know and what you can do and what is new for you, these skills can be trained. Because absolutely agreed that the world around us is evolving, changing in a rapid way, especially with the introduction of AI. We did multiple podcasts and webinars about the influence of AI. Is this a threat or do you need to embrace it and welcome it and go with it? So when you then translate it to, let's say, complex or high-pressure situations, how can teams concretely or specifically apply structured thinking to avoid reactive or poor decisions?
Great question. And I love that you use the word pressure in there.
Yeah.
Because that's often what happens, right? Two things can happen. Sometimes we have to make a decision very quickly, and that leads to a kind of impulsive decision-making process, which often doesn't lead to the best results. Or what sometimes happens is there's not enough pressure, mm-hmm. or at least we don't feel enough pressure, and we become indecisive. So a lot of decisions just take months and months and they get bounced around an organization and they just don't get made. If there's no direct pressure to draw a conclusion. Right, so both of these things happen, and people experience both of the pressure when they have to make a decision very quickly, and also this indecisiveness. And these seem to be opposite cases, but they have a similar solution. If you have a good structured process that you can fall back on, then both of these situations, you can deal with them much more easily.
Exactly.
And so a structured process means you have a way of thinking about decisions that gives you clarity and that gives you a way of moving forward.
Hey, you also mentioned, Philip, that you're giving classes, of course. That means that you also have worked with leaders and professionals on this topic, or you trained a lot of people. Where do you see critical thinking making the biggest differences difference in behavior and outcomes?
So I see that the value of critical thinking is captured mostly in making better decisions. And here, the more important the decision is, the bigger the gain, right?
Yeah.
And this is something we're also not very aware of. So generally, we don't adjust our decision-making process very much to the importance of the decision. So that means we overthink small decisions and we underthink big decisions. So if we were more sensitive to that, if we spent more time on the important decisions and less time on the not-so-important decisions, we would get much better results.
Okay. And how can people like me, for example, be more aware of that?
So the awareness, I always try to train people to recognize those commitments. When you're entering into a commitment, that's when you're making a decision. And so this commitment, it's very obvious when you're committing €1 million to a certain project, right? That feels like a commitment.
Yes.
But you're constantly making these commitments. How will I spend the next hour? How will I approach this conversation? These are commitments that once you enter into them, you can't really reverse them. And so that means you're making a decision.
Yeah.
And these can happen at lots of different levels of importance. So let's say decisions you make every day that maybe involve thousands or tens of thousands of euros are how you deal with your employees, how you motivate them, how you talk to them, how you allocate the work in your team. These decisions don't really feel like high stakes commitments. But if you train yourself to become aware that, hey, I'm actually entering to a commitment here, and taking at least 2 seconds to think, should I think about this more, or am I ready to make this commitment? That's where you create the space to improve those decisions. So you will know that, okay, now I need to engage my critical thinking abilities, or now this is a small decision, or I'm confident that I know what to do here, so I can move forward.
Does this also mean that we have to, let's say, lower or decrease our impulsive thinking and be more tactical about it and more rational about it?
People generally have one of two problems. They're too impulsive or they're too indecisive.
Okay.
And
there's no, okay, yeah, I recognize that, yeah.
Which side do you fall on?
Depends on the topic.
Okay.
If it's a holiday, I want to be impulsive and I want to make decision on the spot based on the emotions and where I am. But if it's a business-wise decision, then I want to think about it critically, because the output or the outcome may affect not only me, the business, but also other people around me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, great. Maybe here I can go a little bit into the psychology behind this.
Yes,
please.
Because
it's kind of interesting. What I like to do here is use the lens of evolution. So when you look at the brain, you can sort of see the different stages of evolution in there. So we all have what is sometimes called the reptilian brain. I'm simplifying a little bit here,
yeah,
right?
But, yeah.
So the reptilian brain is the brainstem and some surrounding areas, and this takes care of our breathing, our heart rate, these basic physiological survival things.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a cortex, and we have a neocortex, and different species have different levels of this. So reptiles have a reptile brain, birds have a cortex, but not a neocortex. All mammals have the neocortex as well. Monkeys have the biggest one, and humans an even bigger one, right?
Yeah.
But the bad news is that these different structures in the brain, these are not like archaeological monuments. These are active parts of the brain, right? And the human brain is just a very small part of it, and it's not the one running the show. So usually the monkey brain is in charge of our decisions. So Daniel Kahneman, I mentioned his name before, he calls this system one, and he calls the human brain system two. So you can think of the system one as your intuition, and system two as your rational mind.
Okay.
Again, I'm simplifying a little for the sake of this conversation. So we often take a lot of decisions from this system one, what I call the monkey brain.
Yeah.
And this tends to be emotion driven. And for some decisions, that's great, right? If you're deciding where to go on holiday or what flavor ice cream to choose, that might be a very good one because what you're trying to get out of that decision is a good experience for yourself, right? And your emotions can tell you a lot about that.
Yeah.
So it's a great skill if you can listen to that intuition.
Yeah.
But for complex business decisions, it's usually not the best approach. And you want to use system two, the rational mind or the human brain. So when we face these complex business decisions, some people just use their system one, their monkey brain. Sometimes even presidents of the United States do that. The other system, system two, when we try to engage that, we don't always gain a lot of traction because sometimes the situation is just too complex and we try to think about it, we don't really make a lot of progress. And so we're kind of stuck. We become indecisive, right? We're trying to think about it, but we don't really get clarity. And in that situation, it's very useful to have a tool, a structured process. And this is something your system two, your rational mind, is very capable of learning. It doesn't have that out of the box. It doesn't come pre-programmed with those tools, but you can learn them.
Yeah, very interesting this. Just a practical question, maybe also interesting for the audience online. If you're at the ice saloon and you have the choosing of 20 flavors of ice cream, do you go for the flavors that you well know? Or are you the person that tries new flavors each time to see if you get a new favorite one?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I tend to stick to my favorite flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Nice to know information for us and the audience. Hey, we often hear that psychological safety in open communications, that's a term, psychological safety is a very trending topic. Actually, it's not trending. It's been there for many, many years, but in the last few years with hashtag Me Too and everything that we saw on in the media world, it's very trending. What is the link between those and critical thinking in teams?
Very interesting question because it has two sides. First is to engage in critical thinking, you have to feel safe to do that. And very often, that's not the case. When you're in a meeting trying to make a decision, certainly if there's a person in a position of power, so let's say the CEO is in the room, it's very hard to engage critically with what the CEO says, right? And so critical thinking is not always welcomed.
Yeah,
it's sometimes also seen as negative. So there's an idea on the table and we're discussing whether to pursue it. If you're the critical person, often that's perceived as you're bringing kind of negative energy into it.
Yes.
Now, that doesn't have to be the case. You can also think critically about decisions not to pursue something. But it often comes with this sense of negativity. And so it's important to give people the space to engage in critical thinking and to create an environment where people feel comfortable to do that.
Yeah.
I can mention two quick ways in which you can do that.
Yes.
Some companies create a culture around this. That's very difficult to do, but sometimes they succeed. So a culture where really critical thinking and open communication is welcomed.
It's welcomed, yeah.
That's very hard to accomplish.
Yeah.
So an easier solution is to create moments for that, so little rituals. And one example of that is called the pre-mortem. This is where you're making a big decision, and before you enter into the commitment, you explicitly create space, and this can be done in 20 minutes, where everybody has to, you assume that the project will be a failure. So it's called pre-mortem.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
It's not a post-mortem.
Yeah.
It's, you assume beforehand that the project will die, and you try to explain why. So everybody has to mention reasons why this might be a failure. And so when you explicitly create that moment, people do feel safe to bring up critical thoughts.
You won't be judged on the content that you provide.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that creates that safety in a very easy way.
So really interesting. Yeah, because creating a new culture and also awareness within your company is, of course, a huge thing.
Yeah.
But creating, let's say, adding small moments where you allow your colleagues or employees who are involved in this project, allowing them a seat at the table and say, be critical on the content. You can say anything that you want to say, but you won't be judged about it. Creates also some safety.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Relevance talks about evidence-based learning. From your perspective, how can we teach thinking in a way that is also evidence-based?
That's actually very important to me because also in academia, of course, it's an important value to us. In this case, it has different levels. So the first would be a lot of this is actually is based on logic. Yeah. So what we try to do is create concepts that help you think more clearly. So we're not saying anything about what the world is like. We're saying these are useful ways of thinking. So that's purely based on logic. Then the second level is the science. So there's a lot of psychology involved. And by now we have a lot of evidence about how the mind works and how people actually make decisions. So we can bring those two together. So you have the psychology, the reality of how people actually make decisions, plus the logic that tells you how people should make decisions. Then you're in a good place to create an intervention, a workshop program that can help actual human beings do better and get closer to that ideal. And then the third level is, by now we also have lots of organizations who have implemented programs like this or policies like this, and we see that they make very good decisions and are successful. Just to give an anecdotal example, ASML, most valuable company in the Netherlands.
Absolutely.
They have a dedicated decision support team. They have a culture around quality decision making. It's just one example, right? But they've been very successful with that.
And this eventually then influence or impact the business, the growth, but also the culture within the company, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Okay. Hey, we also have a small topic within our podcast where we talk about dilemmas, innovations, or bullshit bingo. And it's related to critical thinking. So I have here three cards on the table. You pick one card, which states out the word, if it's a dilemma, innovation, or a bullshit bingo. And I would like then you to explain why critical thinking is a dilemma or an innovation, or in this case, it's overrated and it's a bullshit bingo.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Choose one if you want. A dilemma.
Nice. Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind is there is a dilemma between critical thinking and creative thinking. And so decision making is a little bit broader than critical thinking, right? So critical thinking is a key element in making good decisions, but it's not the whole story. And creative thinking is a little bit opposed to critical thinking. So if you want to think creatively, you have to actually manage to shut down that critical voice.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that creates a dilemma. It also has a solution. You can be good at both. You can be a great critical thinker and creative thinker. You just can't be both at the same time. So you have to make sure you separate your critical thinking from your creative thinking, create space for both. And that's how you can escape that dilemma.
Interesting. There are a lot of people hopefully listening, of course, and we know that they are listening, wants to start sharpening their critical thinking today. What small practical first step should they take, or could they take?
Mm-hmm. They could start by reading a book. I mentioned the book by Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow.
Thinking Fast and Slow.
It's kind of a classic. Another one that I like is How to Think Clearly by Dobelli. So that would be a nice place to start. There's also some simple exercises I do where, for example, you can take an opinion piece from a newspaper and try to restate the argument presented in logical terms. So often these pieces in newspapers are very well written in the rhetorical sense. They sound very convincing. But then if you actually engage critically and try to formulate what argument they're presenting without all the rhetorical and emotional stuff, it doesn't look that impressive anymore. So that's also a nice little exercise.
Very interesting.
And of course, they could sign up for a program at Relevance.
That was my last question to you. How can they come in contact with you, Relevance, and to get a real life class about this topic?
So at Relevance, we're working at a standard proposition around this topic. So this is available for organizations. They can contact Relevance Learning or they can reach out to me on LinkedIn is the best place to find me.
Yeah.
So that would be a good starting point.
So follow you on LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
First step, then contact the Relevance to enjoy a nice class edition to about this topic.
Yes.
Absolutely. Great. Paul, thank you very much. It was very interesting due to the time. We need to, of course, round up our podcast. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts, Philip, and giving your insight to our listeners. I wish you all the best for the future. If you would like to hear more inspiring stories and stay informed about the latest trends in learning and development, then listen to the other episodes of Fit for the Future. a podcast series by Archipel Academy. Listening and subscribing is free via your favorite podcast app. Thank you for listening to our podcast and have a great day.